The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
On the front page of the Sunday Independent, they've done an in-depth poll on quite a few different things, on the budget, what you liked and what you didn't like through it. But the front page poll: nation wants an election next month. Three quarters of the public say the coalition used the budget to buy votes. Gabby Escaita reporting that. She's joining me on the panel, and we'll go through it in a bit more detail in a minute. But although the Taoiseach has continued to resist pressure from backbench TDs and saying that the election is a bubble issue, 55% of those polled want the election to be held either this month or next, with 56% predicting that the country will go to the polls in November. Moving to the front page of the Sunday Times, and this is that story I mentioned in the billboard there, revealed Putin has an agent in the Oireachtas. Irish politician's ego means he has let himself be used. The story from John Mooney, their crime and security correspondent, saying that the Irish military and security services have identified a politician in the Oireachtas who's been recruited by Russian intelligence. They're using the code name Cobalt and can't name the politician for legal reasons. Investigators, the paper says, have found no evidence of any payments into Cobalt's known bank accounts, but they suspect that he may have been personally compromised or his internet history intercepted during travels abroad, possibly in the regions where Russian intelligence operates freely. Interesting story there on the front page. Moving to the Business Post, and they have an in-depth interview with Simon Harris. Not boom and bust. Taoiseach rejects stinging budget criticism. He's denied that there is lavish Celtic Tiger style spending of Bertie Ahern come again in order to buy the budget. Most people don't believe him, according to the poll in the Sunday Indo. Incidentally, also on the front page, they're teasing an interview with John Deasy. John Deasy, formerly of Fine Gael, formerly envoy to the US. And he says, face it, Leo Varadkar, when you're gone, stay gone. Criticising Leo for some of the comments he's made as a commentator-in-chief over the last little while. And the Irish Mail on Sunday, front page, Gardaí raised threat level for ministers. The cabinet has been informed that their security is at the highest level ahead of the next election. John Lee writing that the security threat level to Taoiseach Simon Harris and his cabinet members has been escalated from moderate to substantial in advance of the general election campaign. Those are your papers, rather. We are running through them now with my panel for the next hour. Patrick Tobin, the leader of AIM2, Gabby Escaita, as previously mentioned, political correspondent with the Irish Independent, and Michelle Murphy, research and policy analyst at Social Justice Ireland. Morning to all of you, and thanks very much for coming into the studio today. Patrick, I might start with you, because AIM2 is on 4%, the same as the Green Party. And I suppose whether that is good or not depends on what you think of the Green Party and how well they're doing. But you're probably happy enough, are you?
Yeah, it is good. It's twice what we've achieved in the last election. The European elections gone by showed us surpassing the Labour Party, the Soc Dems and People Before Profit in terms of votes, which I think is significant. Now, our challenge is to, I suppose, crystallise that vote into seats in a number of constituencies. We're targeting about 7 or 8 constituencies around the country at the moment. And we believe in those constituencies, AIM2 is probably best placed to actually take a seat off the government parties in those locations. So we like the likes of Cavan Monaghan, Mayo, Wexford, etc., Dublin West. We're going to really push all our energy into those locations to make sure that we bring a decent team into Leinster House after the election as well.
Yeah, because looking at the breakdown, like, it's very easy to say there's a national picture and a national trend, but it's always fought in constituencies, isn't it? And you had a lot of candidates in the locals that got sort of a nice 6% vote, which is pretty good nationally. But again, converting that to a Dáil level, that's quite difficult to get your extra seats.
It is, but I do think it's significant. Like, we're the only political party that doesn't have any like government funding whatsoever. So we've done it on the
and that's based on how much you got in the last election.
Exactly. We were 2,000 votes off government funding on the last occasion. So we're not going to leave any votes behind us in this election. But we've done it on the clippings of tin on fumes. We've done it through volunteerism on building a grassroots movement across the country. 2,000 members now, which is no insignificant achievement so far. So we are looking forward to the election. We want the government to bring on the election as soon as possible. I've no doubt, you know, that the government have injected a sugar rush of cash into people's pockets because they believe there's going to be an election very, very shortly in relation to this. Even the fact that, you know, they gave some of the once-offs just for October and then again in November, you know, really, for me, is an outstanding example of a government seeking to buy an election. I've never seen such a blatant effort of a government to buy an election. It's nearly like Simon Harris is trying to hypnotise with shiny coins the Irish people to forget about the fact that Fine Gael were in government for the last 14 years and all of the crises that go along with that, and say, listen, just remember that you're going to get a few bob extra after the election.
Do you believe that people would take that on, and that people actually think, oh yeah, no, my pocket's a bit better? Because the big argument seems to be, when you're talking about election date, right, is that a lot of people are saying you need the money needs to be in their pockets, and they need to have the increases in January and whatever, and that's why you might go to February.
I do. I think the majority of people, and this poll shows this, that won't, like, believes that the government is looking to buy the election. I think that's the case. But politics is often about margins. So it's often about just kind of, you know, you don't have to change everybody's mind. You just have to change 3 or 4 or 5% of people's minds in each constituency. And then 6 or 7 or 8 seats fall as a result in relation to that. And I definitely think that, you know, if you look at, it's interesting, Simon Harris has repositioned Fine Gael since the referendum. Since that collapse in the referendums, he has become far more populist in his language, in his policies. And here we are, we have an extremely populist budget, which, you know, doesn't focus on helping those most in need, which actually overextends Ireland significantly in terms of washing money through the system, and it's done for votes. Like, I heard Micheál Martin the day before the budget say, you know, Ireland's economy is in rude health and we're in good shape, we're able to do this. And, you know, it felt like, you know, I was listening to Brian Cowan in relation to that statement. And if, like, it all ties in, like, we're going to talk about the American election shortly, but Trump has said he wants to reduce the American corporation tax to 15%, and it'll only be achieved by companies who onshore manufacturing and et cetera in the United States. And we've built an economy that is heavily reliant now on bargain basement corporation taxes. You know, we in AIM2 have been asking for years the government to invest in infrastructure developments to make Ireland more competitive and not to be so reliant on this corporation tax. And even actually, you know, we had Bertie Ahern in the papers yesterday saying that actually, our model is now extremely exposed. Mm. And if you go behind the budget into the figures, without this corporation tax rush we have, our budget would actually be in deficit at the moment, which is extremely worrying.
Yeah, like you were saying in the poll, 75% of people saying that they think the government was trying to buy their vote in the budget just gone. Gabby, you wrote a lot of the analysis and a lot of the coverage here in the Sindo this morning. Tons of stats. What stood out to you as something that maybe was significant or we haven't heard before or is going to influence the events of the coming weeks?
So I think the point, excuse me, the point about the nation wanting a poll for the government to go to the country, you know, in the coming weeks, in the next month. Like, we've been hearing from government leaders for weeks and months now, oh, the public don't care about a general election. That's not what the public is talking about. If you ask Simon Harris, if you ask Micheál Martin at any press conference, and Sean, you'll know this better than anybody.
We're in a bubble. We're all a little
We're
bubble.
All in a bubble and nobody cares and nobody's worried about the election. They want us to get on with the work. And perhaps some of that's true. But actually, this poll completely turns that on its head, because here is evidence. I mean, of course, it is a poll that's based on a small number of people within the population, but it just shines a light on people actually do want to go to the country. You know, they do think that you've tried to buy them off with this budget, but they are now expecting a general election. And when I speak to government TDs in the corridors of Leinster House, they say, look, the public are ready and we should try and go now, because if you drag it out until next year, that, I suppose, excitement and the adrenaline from the public of a foreign election may be gone. And that's where they fear that it will hurt the coalition parties. And really, the question of timing here is so crucial. I was at the Corja Fáil dinner last night, which is basically a gathering of Fianna Fáil and Fianna Fáil supporters and also media. And everyone that you speak to is talking about the election. And of course, it's a room full of politicals. What else would they be talking about? But there's an argument being made now that actually Micheál Martin does have a little bit more weaponry in his arsenal, because Simon Harris needs to have Fianna Fáil on side. They can't have a bad breakup, as one cabinet minister put it to me in recent weeks. You know, when a general election is called, they need to end on good terms so that after the next general election, they can go back into the room and talk about a formation of government and have that good relationship and continue it if they are to be in government again. So perhaps Micheál Martin does have a little bit more power in his arsenal because he can say, look, actually, I don't want to go in November and I want to go in February. Mm. And then Simon Harris is going to have to sway his way. But look, it's all we're going to be talking about, I think, until the general election is called. And when the general election is called, we're going to be in that excitement cycle. But I will say, I mean, and again, you'll know this from talking to TDs, like this Dáil is more or less finished. They're all in campaigning mode. Leinster House is deserted, apart from maybe some outgoing TDs that are still roaming the corridors. Like anybody who's running again, they're all out in the constituency. They're all doing that work because they know this is it. We're in a general election cycle.
Yeah. One thing I hadn't considered about the delay until February, until a TD mentioned it to me this week, is quite a few candidates have taken breaks from work or taken absences to campaign and that financially they just can't go that bit longer. It can't go to February. It's sustainable to do for 2 months or whatever in the lead up. But if you add another 2 months on, suddenly that's not so easy.
Yes, especially if you're, for example, not a councillor and maybe you're running for some of the other parties, you know, forget Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael or Sinn Féin, you know, Social Democrats, for example, like you might not have all that expense at your disposal and you're literally using your own money to campaign, as a lot of politicians do who are trying to make their names and make it into Leinster House. So it is an expense for people. I mean, look, you can't be relying on when the general election is going to be called. It's a risk that you take any time as politicians, but I think a lot of them are sitting ducks. Their turkeys waiting for Christmas.
Yeah. How much does it cost to run, Patter?
Well, it costs, you need about $8,000, I suppose, anyways, to run into any type of a campaign for a general election in terms of posters and leaflets, etc. A lot of the other political parties, they pay for a lot of that work to be done now because they don't have the members. And then you're talking about $15,000-$20,000 potentially for a campaign. But just to add to that point from Gabby, the Dáil has turned into kind of a zombie Dáil at the moment. Yes. Because like all the debates are falling early. You know, a debate might have to be timetabled to start at around 7 o'clock in the evening, but it's starting at maybe 5 now because they can't get enough speakers to fill them. Ministers' questions time are not lasting the full hour and a half now because nobody's showing up in the Dáil for questions. And I actually think that's a really poor way to run a country. And I do think that the Taoiseach should actually just call it or not call it at this stage. The idea that we're going to just, for maybe political strategy of the government, leave this in a limbo situation for a period is wrong.
Michelle Murphy of Social Justice Ireland, there's another part of this poll in the paper this morning. It's going through individual measures and whether people approve or disapprove of them. Quite approval of the income tax changes, for example, 34% in favour of that, 33% against the double welfare payment as opposed to 8% in favour. I suppose what stood out for you there from the poll, but then also from the Social Justice Ireland view this week as to maybe what should have been there that wasn't and how much extra the rates should change by?
I suppose what stood out for me from the poll is, you know, the welcome to the income tax cuts and the changes to the bans, even though they really only benefit you if you earn over 42,000, realistically, because they change the threshold, you will see not so much. In terms of the double welfare payment, 33% of people disapprove. I think what I found really interesting about that was the question, do you trust the current government's ability to manage the public finances? And 50% said no.
Yeah.
And when you drill down into government supporters, I think that should be really concerning for them, because on the back of a budget, and 75% of respondents said they thought the government was trying to buy their vote in the election, that should be really concerning for them. Because if you look at what they did in the budget, given the vast resources they had available to them, structurally and strategically, and thinking about, as Patter mentioned, some of the structural challenges in the economy, be it housing, be it infrastructure, be it poverty, for example, they didn't address them. You know, it was supposed to be, the Taoiseach is quoted in the Business Post as saying it's a children's budget. But like, if you want to lift children out of poverty, they're not going out on their own paying for things. It's the family. It's the parents. So it's either adult social welfare rates, which they didn't do, the second rate of child benefit for lower income households, which they chose not to do, and looking at low pay. So like the big ticket items that would reduce child poverty for the second year in a row, they chose not to do because they decided to put their money elsewhere. So I think, and there's really interesting analysis in the Business Post in terms of, and I know I was listening obviously to the budget speech and the reference consistently to future generations and to principles and frameworks about what we do with this excess money we have. The two funds that the Taoiseach referenced, they were set up in budget 2024. They've had 12 months to come up with principles and a framework as to what they're going to do with that beyond, you know, the National Development Plan. I mean, what more are we going to do with it? We should have all of those things in place. He's talking about billions into infrastructure, but all they put in was three from the AIB shares. There was 1.25 to the Land Development Agency, 750 million to the grid, and the remaining to housing. That's really small when you look at also the Business Post are telling us that Ishka Aaron are saying we need 120 billion euros, potentially, at least 60 to fix our water.
Yeah.
And that's just one element. So
now they would say, I suppose, as well, that the Apple tax money is going to go towards that, that they didn't specifically outline here, here's how much you're getting.
14 billion, right?
It's kind of mad we're saying only 14 billion. Just to point out, but I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying.
When you're looking, and yes, I mean, they will say they didn't have time. But also, when you look at politically, if we are going to an election, I mean, to me, looking at the Northwest, which is where I live, infrastructure is huge. Transport connectivity does not exist. The two government parties are in real trouble in Donegal, and yet not one of them thought to say, look at this Apple money, we should ring fence some of this to deal with the mica problem. You know, to me, from a political perspective, I found that really, really surprising, because they are going to be under real pressure there, because the mica party got three seats in the council elections in Donegal. They're going to be under huge pressure. And I just think if 50% of the people who respond to this, and it's a representative sample, I assume, don't trust you to manage the public finances. You're going to have to go out and knock on doors, whether it's November or February. People don't like opening their door in the evening when it's dark outside. And you're probably going to be asked some pretty tough questions. Like, some people will welcome, you know, the changes to the inheritance tax, the double payments. And I thought Gabby's story was really interesting about the Minister for Social Protection in terms of the budget negotiations, because she's a great story in the Indo about that. But and it goes to show, I suppose, how effective that minister has been, because we should not be welcoming, again, the third year in a row, you know, an additional fuel allowance lump sum payment, a supposed cost of disability payment, when there's been a report on the cost of disability on her desk for 3 months, a green paper, 3 years, sorry, a green paper that was shelved, and people with a disability still waiting for this government to actually do something for them in terms of service provision, but also acknowledging that your disability has a daily cost for your entire life.
Yeah. Gabby, give us the detail of that story for those who haven't seen it.
So I write about the budget negotiations and how they all, basically how the budget came to be in the Sunday Independent today, and just what Michelle's referencing there, and Heather Humphreys. I mean, certainly she blew them all out of the water, I think is one of the quotes that I have in the piece. She's a seasoned performer. This is not her first rodeo. It's not her first budget. I think at one point during the negotiations, she extracted about 60 million out of the two money ministers, which is some feat that other ministers cannot boast about. But, you know, the double payment is really, I mean, per child, that's 560 euro that those parents are going to get before the year is out. I mean, that is really quite remarkable. The double payment, I think, is the brainchild of Taoiseach Simon Harris and the Minister for Social Protection. She obviously had that row with Tánaiste and Micheál Martin over the job seekers rates. She wanted them to go up by 10 euro, and then she wanted pensions and the other payments by 15, and some of the new paternity, maternity benefits up by 26. And in fairness, you know, Micheál Martin came out and he said that that was never tabled. That was rejected by Fine Gael sources, who've said we've been tabling it every year or pushing for it every year. And in fairness, in the end, like, Heather Humphreys got her way. You know, they agreed on the 12 euro weekly welfare increases, but there's still the benefits for the new parents. They still went up by 15. So there still is a discrepancy there. Of course, in some of the papers as well, we've been reading about Pascal Donoghue, and Prudent Pascal is usually his nickname this time of year. Certainly he was annoyed at media leaks. He brought in a newspaper into one of the meetings and he read from the newspaper and aired his unhappiness about the stuff that was being reported. But listen, ultimately, I mean, this was a blockbuster budget of over 100 billion euro. I mean, that was the envelope, and that has been the highest that we've seen ever. Ultimately, yes, the coalition hopes that it's going to win them a couple of votes. I think the child benefit point is really interesting, because if you want to give people in this country free money, effectively, that is the easiest way to do it, because the mechanism is there. All the government have to do is sign a piece of legislation that says you're going to get X and you're going to get Y and you're going to get Z. And so now you have parents who have two children that are going to be 1,000 euro better off before Christmas regardless of whether or not they need it. And Christmas is ultimately paid for. I mean, that's like, I don't know, you know, certainly the government would think if that's not going to make you vote for us, we don't know what will.
Yeah, just the big weakness, I thought, in the budget, and you mentioned Prudence Pascal there, the big weakness is there's nothing done to fix, let's say, the massive waste that's happening within the economy. So, you know, in many ways, we are getting less for more money. And, you know, I think it's interesting that the mobile phone pouches grabbed people's attention of another example of a government so disconnected from where normal people are at in terms of value for money, etc.
But does it not say a lot about the budget that in a budget of 105 billion euro, it's 9 million on phone pouches that becomes the big controversy?
No.
That there's actually not a huge amount to pick massive holes in here.
See, I think the phone pouches is emblematic of all the steps of government waste that we've seen over the last while. So we've seen, you know, the 2.5 billion euros in Children's Hospital, the 300 million on Metro North and not a shovel put in the ground, you know, the 20 million on ventilators that don't work that are actually costing about 30 grand a year to store at the moment, the 130 electric buses that couldn't move an inch because someone didn't put an application in for a charger. So this is, you know, obviously we don't have to mention the Gucci bicycle shed and what have you. So this is just another part of this process. And this is key as well, though. Unless we actually start to fix, you know, the waste elements, we're not going to get value for money, and we won't always have this money. And that is a serious, there will come a day, the economy moves in a cycle, and there will come a day when, you know, we will look back in this largesse and waste and rue it for the damage that's happened.
Is that an issue for the budget, though, or is it more so of an ongoing, I suppose, process that maybe government has to think about, not just this government that's in power now, but whoever comes after the next general election? Is it more of an attitude thing? And also, like, don't civil servants also have to answer for some of this when it comes to the OPW, for example?
So you're absolutely right. It is a process. But the fact that this budget came with the background being waste, you know, it was launched in the context of waste. And like we in A2 have been looking for a call that actually it will be written into the contracts, the employment contracts and the job specs of senior civil servants, that they are responsible for the public purse and for value, so that if they make a mess such as this, there actually is discipline up to and including people losing their jobs. And see, in the private sector, you know, there's a cost when people waste, and that's a catalyst that forces people to mind money carefully. But that doesn't happen in the public sector at the top level, and that's why we're seeing such waste, you know, and that's a difficulty there as well. The other issue is capacity, because we're throwing money in terms of housing now, we're throwing money in terms of 25 billion euros in a health service. But doctors and nurses are still voting with their feet, and they're leaving to Australia and Canada. Construction workers are not available to us, and the government has to deal with that capacity element within the delivery of infrastructure and the health service, or otherwise all this money is meaningless in terms of the delivery to the citizen in the end.
I am back with my newspaper panel, Padraig Tobin of A2, Gabby Gavioscaita of the Irish Independent, and Michelle Murphy from Social Justice Ireland. And a lot of the papers, as we are a month out from the US election, are paying an awful lot of attention to it. We're going to be crossing to the US in the second hour of the show. But Michelle, we were talking before about narrowing the tax base and making Ireland less competitive, I guess, on the international stage. Trump has been talking sort of the same thing, narrowing their tax base to bring some of those big FDI dollars back to the United States.
Yeah, and that should be a real concern for us, because the windfall gains that Padraig referred to, I mean, that's all corporate revenue, and our tax base, it's very unsustainable in terms that a large proportion is that corporate piece, and then the rest is income tax, PRSI and VAT. You know, so we do not have a broad base. We managed to narrow it in the budget, which is really concerning. We didn't do any sort of consolidation to think about, okay, our population is growing, it's also aging. So how do you plan on getting that recurring revenue, so that kind of stable money that comes in every year to pay for the services you're going to have to provide, and more of them, you know, as people age, they're going to be different costs. No plans around that. And actually in the interview with Daniel Murray, the Taoiseach actually references the need that there's work to be done in broadening the tax base beyond the highly concentrated FDI sector. And I think it's really surprising that he's pointing at this in terms of something the party's going to do maybe in the future, post-election. I mean, they had a prime opportunity to do it just, you know, on Tuesday gone, and they didn't. And that's the concern, because the thing is, those windfall revenues has kind of let the political system totally avoid a really, really, really hard conversation about how we are actually going to pay for things. Because you need revenue, which is tax money, to pay for things. If you keep telling people we're going to cut taxes because they're bad, then how are you going to turn around, or whatever government is there next time or the government after that is actually going to have to turn around and say to people, actually, do you know what? We need to start raising money, which means raising taxes. Which ones are we going to raise? Mm. You know, and kind of no plans, because also you can't just keep relying on income tax and PRSI. What about those recurring ones like a proper site value tax, taxes on assets, the things that are going to bring in that stable revenue? You know, it wasn't in any way apparent on Tuesday. And I suppose that's something that the next government really is going to have to grapple with. And they're not, you know, no political party is going to have to grapple with that.
Well,
but they will.
We have a mansion tax now for the first time, which is it's
going to bring a lot of money that I imagine, you know.
Well, I think it will. I mean, it's 20 million this year and then is it 80 million next year? Like, I know it's not a massive amount, but like, it's not to be scoffed at. I think the issue there is this ticking pensions time bomb that we hear so much talk about. Our people are living longer and the social insurance fund is ever shrinking, really. And we haven't really come up with a solution for it.
Well, I mean, there was a slight increase in the PRSI, but it needed to be more because you need to be shoring up that fund now. But it's not just pensions. That whole commentary of time bomb, does that mean people living older is a bad thing? It's actually a really good thing. And it's not necessarily the pensions. It's the other services, because as you acquire disabilities, as you age, it's home help hours. You know, it's managing chronic illnesses. So figuring out a way in a, especially a dispersed rural population, that you can do that while you have a crisis of GPs. It's that kind of thinking and those kind of things. And being able to, because you can project what's going, you know, the potential cost, but it's where that money is going to come from. Because as Patter pointed out, once you strip out that windfall money, we're actually running, if we're running a deficit now, then what does that say for us in 10 or 20 years time? And that kind of consolidation, when, you know, all eyes are going to be on the US in November. And like, depending on what happens, that will have ramifications for, you know, global taxation of multinationals and where they book their revenue. And that will have ramifications for us.
Mm. What did you think, before we move on from the budget point, actually, of that idea that Gavi mentioned earlier and the splitting the social welfare and not increasing? Because the kind of argument from Fine Gael is that all these people are unemployed, they could get a job, people are crying out for jobs, and we shouldn't be rewarding people for not working.
Absolutely would disagree with it. Like, we're at full employment, so that cohort is small. And actually, most of the social welfare budget is on pensions, carers and children. It's not actually on that group. This is at a time of full employment. What government should be looking at is, why do we still have a problem with low pay? And how can you support that group? And it goes back to this thing, are we now pitting one more deserving group against another? And I mean, that's really not where we should be going, because the cost of that is minimal. And they were well able to come up with that double child benefit payment. You could have increased child benefit for everyone, or you could have brought in part that, and combined with the money spent on the inheritance tax threshold, you would have brought in the second rate of child benefit. You know, those are the decisions that were made. That's a political decision. That's a political calculation. And it shows what they value and what they prioritise and what they don't. And clearly, structural inequality and child poverty is not a priority, because if it was, they would have done something about it.
Yeah. Patter, when you look at budgets that are happening around the world, I mean, the UK is going to have a kind of slash and burn budget, France having similar problems at the minute. We are completely an outlier at the minute. Do you worry about the sustainability of that and the spending that was announced this week?
Yeah, our economic cycle has always been a little bit different, actually, from Europe and in relation to Britain. And but I do think we have learned very little from the crash in 2007, 2008. Like, house prices, while they're not fueled currently by a credit bubble from the banks, they are still far overpriced, and that's the reality of it. And actually, if there is a credit element in that, it is of the big international, you know, vulture funds who have, you know, invested a whole lot of money within that sector in the future. I do think that we have to get to a situation where we have a less of a reliance on the corporation taxes, because there's no doubt in my mind that corporation tax is a significant exposure. And as sure as night follows day, there will come a time when that's going to fall. And as a result, all the other elements of the tax will have to increase to fill the gap. And it's a bigger gap because the government have made it so big in this particular election or this particular budget as well. In terms of the long-term unemployed, one of the reasons I think we have a long-term unemployment issue is because we have a welfare cliff. So in other words, where some people feel that if they join the workforce, that they have a fall in the supports that they receive. And I think there has to be a focus on a graduated reduction in welfare supports for people so that they can get back into the workforce without actually finding that, you know, they lose so many different supports in relation to...
this is the idea that if you go back to work, your income then disqualifies you from some of the benefits.
Yeah, it's the thresholds. Yeah. And they've never been good at graduate. Like, we haven't successfully managed to look at how you graduate the thresholds. So it's not a big... Because for, you know, a family or someone that's headed by someone who's unemployed, the medical card is huge.
Yeah.
And then the threshold, if you... That's a huge cost then, because if, you know, you need to go to the GP or, you know, get fill a prescription, it's those things. And it's part of why we need to look at how you graduate that properly and look at those thresholds.
Because people are making like a logical choice over, you know, the level of supports they're getting. And if those supports are deleted, they actually could be worse off if they go back into the workforce. And so graduation means that they won't fall off the cliff. And as a result, it'll be easier for them to get back into the workforce.
Because we're doing it the other way now with the pay-related job seekers benefit that's due to be brought in. Like, that's the opposite end of it, you know, that legislation we brought in, which we used to have before. So you use your job, you're the first, I think, 9 months of social job seekers benefit is, it's a proportion of what you used to earn, you know. So it's the same thing, but it's, that's just another example. We've had, you know, a post-crash, we've had a long time of sustained economic growth to try and get to grips with this, and we haven't.
One small point again in the capacity element of the budget. Like, right now, Australia is recruiting more Gardaí than the Irish government is, okay? Which is incredible. So, it's just absolutely shocking. And the reason that's happening is because there's better pay terms and conditions for those Gardaí who leave Ireland and go to work for the Australian police forces. And, you know, it's in terms of doctors at the moment, in Irish universities, in the medical schools, the majority of students in those medical schools are actually students from outside of the EU. Why? Because they spend about 150 grand for their degree. And those universities are dependent upon that money to fund their universities. And as a result, when they graduate, the majority of those don't become doctors here in Ireland. And that causes a big difficulty for us in terms of the level of GPs we have. So the Irish government need to focus on investing into the university system so those universities are less dependent upon that foreign money to actually run their services. Like last year, out of 700 doctors that graduated, 400 of them left Ireland. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why we're having such difficulty. So to make sure that we have capacity for the health service and for the likes of the Gardaí, we need to make sure there's proper pay terms and conditions. That needs to be dealt with in terms of the bargaining with the trade unions. And we need to make sure that there's enough investment there to make sure that those services run properly.
Gabby, one of the things that caught my eye in the morning this morning is the Business Post interview with Simon Harris, and this argument he is making whenever it's put to him that this budget isn't prudent and it's overspending and all that. Well, we're putting aside money. We're putting money into these reserve funds. And I think a lot of people forget Charlie McCreevy also put money for $25 billion into reserve funds, and a damn sight of good it gave us in the past. So like, is that a credible argument in your view, or is it kind of, look, here's the gloss, we are being somewhat responsible?
Yeah, the government is kind of saying, look at this cost of living package and all this money we're waving in front of you. We are also putting some money away for a rainy day. We're not really sure what that rainy day looks like. I mean, like, in my opinion, when you compare some of the public infrastructure that we have available to us here in Ireland, it is severely lacking when you compare it to other European cities. I mean, that is just the case. For example, the metro, which is the bat that I like to wave every once in a while. I mean, the fact that we don't have one, when you compare it to, for example, our rent prices are comparable with that in London, even in New York. These countries or these cities that are really well established, there's so many opportunities there for young people. They're cultural hubs. Meanwhile, you know, our institutions, unfortunately, are closing. Our venues are closing. Some of those iconic pubs are now gone. Mm. We don't even have a way for our people to get around the city in an acceptable way. Like, there was a time when, you know, very recently, when actually borrowing was very, very cheap from the EU. And I think this is something that Leo Varadkar has spoken about a little bit. He said, sometimes we've been too cautious. So I know that we're talking about spending money and we're being a bit reckless. But actually, I think Pascal Donoghue, if he's to be thinking about his legacy at any point in the next couple of years, he'll probably say to himself, do you know what? We should have borrowed when the borrowing was cheap, and we should have really put that into major infrastructure projects. And you could argue, well, look, we have the National Children's Hospital that's about to open at some stage, and that's cost billions and billions. So perhaps it's not necessarily a thing of money. It's that we don't actually know what to do with it. And when you look at this week's budget, I mean, we're spending 9 million on phone pouches. And yes, perhaps maybe it could have a positive effect on our children in the long run. But when you look at that cost of living package, like cost of living and inflation, it is still an issue for people, but not as much as it was last year, for example, when you could make an argument for a really big package. But actually the government is saying, look, just give the cash back to the people. So perhaps the issue is not money, and it's like the housing thing. You know, really, Darragh O'Brien is not stuck for money. It's just the capacity in the sector that he doesn't have to deliver all those houses.
Can I just want to come in on the 9% VAT for hospitality? So that mightn't feel like a very progressive policy, but I was canvassing in a town, I won't name it, during the week, and I knocked on the door. A fella says, the six pubs after closing in the last 10 years in this town, there used to be two hotels, there's none now. There used to be two banks, there's none now. And you can't even get a hot meal in this town anymore. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, if you go outside of the greater Dublin area, there are so many towns that are, you know, the dereliction is every second building on their main street at the moment. And there's a big necessity for there to be social hubs. We are withdrawing, unfortunately, to screens in our lives. We do need to have social hubs within our communities. And I believe that the government, if they wanted to, they could have reduced the VAT rate for hospitality to 9% if they separated small restaurants and pubs from the large hotels in the cities who are making massive profits, or they introduced a city hotel tax. So the hotels that are charging 400 quid when there's a big concert on, you know, that there's an actual cost to that for that. But there is really a rural Ireland, regional Ireland, many towns are dying on their feet at the moment. And one of the reasons is because the towns as a social hub is being gutted.
Yeah, some of the texts in agreeing with your point. One message, it's not all about Dublin when you're talking about infrastructure. How about a motorway between Cork and Limerick? And I think that project has the approval, maybe doesn't have the funding yet. Another text talking about the point that both of Michelle and Patter were making about losing your allowances. This text says, I'm on disability allowances, I have MS. I'm able to work but won't get a job as I'd lose too much. Medical card, free travel card, daughter Susie grant, etc. There's no incentive for me to work even though I really want to. And there is a front page of the Sunday Times that makes for very interesting reading this morning. Revealed, Putin has an agent in the Oireachtas. John Mooney reporting that the Irish politician's ego means he has let himself be used. The alarm was raised about this politician that they're nicknaming Cobalt for legal reasons after he met with a Russian diplomat who was in the country and found to be a Russian spy. Cobalt was approached by Garda special branch officers and formally warned that he was being targeted by the Russians. His dismissal of those concerns strengthened their suspicions. Investigators have found no evidence of any payments into any of Cobalt's known bank accounts. They suspect, though, he might have been personally compromised or his internet history intercepted during travels abroad. Patter, not you, is it?
Well, I would say that. No, it's not me, I can declare. It's going to set fire to the rumour mill, I tell you, in Leinster House at the moment. I've always been of the view that there has been, let's say, you know, British kind of, you know, intelligence in around, you know, Leinster House for a long period of time. It doesn't surprise me that there's been, you know, Russian, you know, intelligence efforts in Leinster House. And given what's happening in the Middle East, I wouldn't be surprised if there's, you know, some, you know, influence there as well. But it's actually quite serious too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say that, you know, Ireland has a weakness in terms of its counterintelligence, in terms of its security. You know, the defence forces are in a weak state. We had a massive big cyber attack, which cost, you know, 100 million euros to the HSE just a few years ago. And we're going to have to spend about 650 million euros in updating that cyber security. Believe it or not, you know, when that cyber attack happened, the National Cybersecurity Centre was on a budget of 5 million. And the same year, the Taoiseach's office was spending 15 million euros on PR. Mm. So that kind of shows you where our kind of priorities are in terms of investment. So I do think Ireland needs to really step up a gear in terms of counterintelligence into what's happening. And yeah, I wouldn't like to be that individual who's walking around Leinster House this week.
Absolutely
trying
not.
To keep their heads down.
Yeah, everyone trying to identify them, Gabby. And like we say, we kind of say it jokingly, but there is a serious element to it in that it feels all very House of Cards, but then you see actually there's a lot of ways that politicians could be influenced. And while it's hard to see a very overt pro-Russian voice in the Dáil or the Shannon or wherever this might be, it's behind the scenes where a lot of lobbying can be done.
Yeah, and if you look at how they did it, I mean, they honey-trapped a member of the Oireachtas, who John Mooney calls Cobalt. Sources branded him a useful idiot, They lured him in using a honeypot, which is a strikingly looking woman, to entangle the politician romantically. So kick them where it hurts, really. He was used as an asset, as an easily influenced person to make introductions, to disrupt public discourse or air Kremlin's views if needed. So it wasn't necessarily like, you know, this man is within, you know, the government buildings and he's going to try and shake it all up or and leak all sensitive confidential information. It was more so this person's an asset. He can introduce us to people if we need him to. It's our way in, effectively. And so if you have one person in there, then you can expand out your network, of course. And yeah, it's really worrying. Obviously, the speculation will be on to figure out who it is. But ultimately, this person should be, you know, in some way removed from the houses of the Oireachtas. Or is the argument to be made for that everyone has free speech and that everyone can be aligned to whoever it is that they want to be aligned with? But of course, we know how the Russians operate. And this is basic playbook stuff. Now, when you look at Ireland and Russia, what's the threat or what's the interest for Russia and Ireland? I mean, they were very successful in turning. If you look at the fishermen debacle there a couple of years ago, when you had those Russian Navy ships coming in and they wouldn't engage the politicians, but it was the fishermen that were successful in talking down effectively the Russians and scaring them off. I mean, that was a manufactured story by the Kremlin where the public were looking on. Irish diplomacy totally failed, was seen not to work, but actually the fishermen were able to say, it's okay, lads, we've scared off the Russians, we've won this particular argument. And that plays into the hands of the Kremlin because they've been successful there in turning Irish politicians against the public and they're listening to so-called common man. So these are all things straight out of the Russian playbook, certainly when you talk to, you know, people in the Western states or the Eastern European states who are well familiar with the Russian playbook. And really, like, we have to start taking all of this very, very seriously. Yes, the Russians may not be attacking or invading us, but we have to be very careful that we don't become a part of their ploy.
Mm. Yeah, because you think, Michelle, like, we all think of other countries as the ones being influenced, mm-hmm. but actually there's a lot of advantage when you think of Ireland as an important voice within the EU as a home of sort of the tech sector. You know, people might say, little old Ireland, why would the Russians be bothered with us? But there is advantage to them.
There is, and it's the point, that, as Gabby said, it's not about them coming to invade you, it's about using. And they're not going to be in there, maybe in Oireachtas committees trying to get you to change things. It's like the discourse or what you can put in the public narrative or what suddenly gets discussed or doesn't get discussed. I mean, that's the reality. And then, you know, using that to their advantage. And it is a door into the EU, but it's also seeing like, okay, what tax advantage are multinationals getting here? What, you know, what's the advantage to them being here? How can we then influence, for example, what's happening in the US and the election? And make it an issue there. So it's a different sense. I suppose to me, I'm really fascinated as to why Cobalt was picked as the nickname. Is it to do with the colour of the suit this person wears? Like, do we know it's a man? Well, yes, we do know it's a man. So is it the colour of the suit? I certainly will be paying a lot more attention to, you know, people's attire come Monday when they're in and out of Leinster House. But
they're all wearing blue suits.
But the other thing that comes, it's like, your point, Gabby, well, what happens? I mean, this person's been elected by the public. I don't think there's actually a mechanism to remove someone from Leinster House for this because the public elect you. And if you get the required number of votes, then you're elected and you have to wait until the next election to see what happens. Unless, of course, it's the Shannage because the public don't elect you then. So either those who can vote or the county councillors.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but that, it even throws off that thing. So what if this actually did become a big thing? You couldn't actually, you know, in terms of how the Oireachtas functions at the moment, you're elected by the electorate, by the people.
But can you be kicking out politicians just because you disagree with their view? I mean, that's another part of it. Yeah.
Or should there be actually even a defence for this person if they've been trapped in by some incriminating evidence and are sort of being held? You know, it's a different personal situation for them.
Just in terms of cyber security, it is an issue in what we invest in that because even a couple of months ago when everything sort of crashed,
the HSE and others, yeah, we've seen it down through the past. So we'd love to pick up on that point, but I'm afraid we're fresh out of time on this to speculate on the men in cobalt suits. My thanks to my newspaper panel, Pat O'Toole, the leader of the A2 party, Gabby Escaita, political correspondent with the Irish Independent, and Michelle Murphy, research and policy analyst at Social Justice Ireland.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.